When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Spring? Is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. That means more comfort and less baggage. Try the Superlight Tree Runner with a cushy foam midsole and breathable eucalyptus fiber upper. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. So what can you do in a Superlight shoe? What can't you do is the better question. And because they're super packable, the real question is, where are you taking them? Experience how Allbirds redefines comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's Allbirds.com. Code SUPER24.
Hello, and welcome to the Body Protest Podcast, a new intersectional body image podcast that takes a deep dive into our often complicated, occasionally treacherous relationships with our bodies. We want to figure out how we can all feel more at home in our bodies and what it will take to create a world that fosters positive body image. I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Nadia Craddock. In each episode, we'll be combining storytelling with science to discuss body image, so how we feel about how we look in relation to our weight, shape, race, skin colour, physical ability, sexuality, mental health, and whatever else comes up.
This podcast is brought to you by the Pink Protest.
Okay, so today we're going to be joined by Montana Rose Brown, former Love Island contestant and founder of the Swim Society.
Montana is absolutely amazing. She's the most radiant woman I've ever seen in my life. we spoke a lot about my feminist guilt around the TV show Love Island. I've been very open on social media that it is genuinely one of my favourite shows. Please don't judge me. But it's incredible. Like, I think it's an amazing social experiment, but obviously it's got a lack of diversity. There's a lot of kind of... there's a lot of conversation around the aftercare that the contestants receive. Montana speaks a lot about both of these things. It's still something I'm very conflicted on, but I do really enjoy the show. And it's nice talking to someone who has been through the show and the process and telling us how it affected her.
Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing her perspective on it. And I haven't seen Love Island. Obviously, as a body image researcher, I've heard lots of the discourse around it, and there was something that did make me feel very uncomfortable with something along the lines of cosmetic surgery ads popping up on, maybe it was on YouTube or something. But
oh God.
It's kind of terrifying, but you're not bothered by the...
Well, the thing is, like, I think I so have hardwired into my brain now that I don't compare myself to other people that I'm really luckily unaffected by it, but I know that I'm in the minority there. Like, around the time the show airs, there's 100 memes being like, when I'm watching Love Island and then I look at my stomach, and you're like, oh no, like, I don't want you to feel like that. And but you know how I see it is, I'm like, the people on the show are so like conventionally attractive that to me they're like CGI, like they're not even real. Like, obviously they're real and they're wonderful people, but it's so far removed from what my body would ever look like that I'm like, well, I don't compare myself to that, because why would I? You're setting yourself up for failure.
Can you see the show being run with like a diverse range of bodies?
I mean, I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because like, yes, because I think I'm really sexy and should be on Love Island. But again, I know that what was the quote that ITV said? They were like, we would love to make the show more diverse, but we also need the contestants to fancy each other. And I was like, yes, because...
Really? Did they say that?
Yeah, someone said that. And I was like, oh yeah, because no one's ever fancied me. I'm like, come on. I'm like, it's so ridiculous. You're like, but people who don't look like that find love and happiness all the time. And it's, you know, it's an unrealistic thing. I think if you take it with a grain of salt and watch it, you know, with an open mind and an open heart, then it's fine. But I guess I always think it should have maybe a warning for teenagers being like, you know, this isn't entirely realistic.
Yeah. Well, after speaking to Montana, I I felt like I wanted to watch the show. I think what her commentary on it was really interesting. I know there's been a lot of chat and hype about the WhatsApp group that Scarlett this year.
It was such a special time, and Montana was in the WhatsApp group, and we were all just like, be cool, Montana's here. Like, Montana truly is such a special, warm, incredible, intelligent woman. The WhatsApp group was all of my feminist heroes in one space, all talking about our hidden, forbidden love of Love Island. And it was a very special time in my life. Thank you, Scarlett, for creating that space for us.
Sounds great. I think the other thing I just wanted to flag with our conversation with Montana that I thought was really interesting is that she referenced a lot about playing sports and really enjoying playing sports growing up. And it sounded like that was almost like a protective factor for her in terms of like body image, because she was just like, I didn't really struggle with any like body image things growing up. And she kind of referenced being like playing lacrosse and doing this. And I think we see that over and over with research that girls drop out of playing sports because of body image concerns. They start like kind of opting out, not really wanting to put themselves out there. But then it's almost like catch 22, because then it can be that protective factor, because then you become more in tune to your body and you kind of appreciate your body. You see your body as something else if you're engaging in sports. So I think it's something that we'd really like to see more working on, that dropout.
Yeah, I definitely did that. I was body shamed by my PE teacher. Which is so sad. She was like, I'm really worried about your health. And I was like, bitch, no, you're not. Like, you're not worried about my health. And I was like, I just don't want to do cross country running. Like, I could do it if I wanted to, but like, everyone is shaming me for having a little tummy. Like, how dare you? But I think it made me so sad, because when I became an adult, I loved exercising. Yeah. Like, I completely reestablished my relationship with it and like, went to yoga, went to spin class. Like, it wasn't for weight loss, obviously. Like, I just went because it was good for my mental health and it made me really happy. And I was like, I wish we could give that to teenagers and be like, no, exercise is actually really fun and good for you, and it's good for your mind and it's good for your soul. Like, and I felt like what I love about Montana is you can tell that she's a woman who has had that her whole life.
Yeah.
Been connected to her body, and it's like, it's really special.
Yeah. And I think with exercise, you definitely can find something that's like, that suits you. Cause like, not everyone is going to be a cross country runner. Like, that's not for everyone. Right. Like, so you just find what feels good in your body. And I think it is a bit about experimentation and trying things out and then being like, oh, you know, I'll try this, try that, try the other, and then, and see what feels good, and different things will feel good at different times.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to love cross country at school, but I would not run for 5 minutes now.
I despise running. I taste blood like within 2 minutes and I'm like, this is not correct. Before we go into the episode, we also talk a lot about Instagram and pressure to be authentic, pressure to post, pressure to look a certain way, be a certain way. Obviously, you know what podcast you're listening to. But it was very interesting to hear Montana's perspective on that, because I personally really love her Instagram. I think she's really open on it, and it's just very wholesome. But she talked a lot about how she felt the need to cover up a bit more after Love Island, and that was just very interesting to me. And genuinely, I love the Swim Society brand. I think it's brilliant, and I wear a lot of their bikinis.
Awesome. I think it's time to hear from Montana.
Brilliant.
Self-love is true love. Honour the most important relationship in your life, yourself. Our sponsor, Womanizer, believes that every person has the right to pleasure and self-love, regardless of age, sexuality, size, and colour.
A wonderful way to learn to appreciate your body is through self-pleasure. Masturbation is a truly joyful way to connect with your body and learn to feel comfortable in your skin. Everyone should feel able to feel comfortable in their body and explore their own sexual needs and desires. In this house, we see masturbation as the purest form of self-love.
Unlike other vibrators, Womanizer products stimulate with soft pressure waves. It is stimulation without touch, meaning there is no chance of overstimulation or loss of sensitivity. Get yourself your very own Womanizer at womanizer.com/UK so you can light a candle, run a bath, and have a mind-blowing night of sexy self-care.
Montana, thank you so much for joining us on the Body Protest podcast.
I know, we are very excited. We are joined by the fantastic Montana Rose Brown.
Whoop, whoop.
I'm going to give myself a whoop, whoop. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I never know what to say. Like, okay, I'm Montana Brown, former chamber choir. the lacrosse captain. But obviously I was on Love Island in 2017, and now I kind of do bits of like presenting. I've obviously got my own brand, Swim Society.
Which we will talk a lot about later.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot about. But overall, just normal girl.
Yeah.
Montana Brown, normal girl.
Also the most radiant person I've ever seen, honestly. Yeah. I have to make that comment genuinely. When I was with you the other night, me and my best friend were just going, but she's so beautiful. Which is, you know, not to make you uncomfortable, but genuinely we're like, God, what a radiant angel.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, so I guess we'll dive in.
Yeah, so I have to start off by saying I'm probably the only person in the UK who has not watched an episode of Love Island.
I like that. I actually quite like that. It is very addictive, so don't start, because otherwise I feel like you will.
Well, because I think that's my relationship with TV in general, that once I start, I fully commit, and then I'm like awake until 2 a.m, and then I can't.
And the problem with Love Island is I honestly will cancel social plans to stay in and watch it. Like, genuinely.
That's what I've heard so much.
Over summer, people will be like, do you want to come out and like sit on a rooftop pub garden? I'm like, absolutely not. And like, if I'm not 9 before 9, I'm like, get away from me. So maybe don't. Funny. But it's also it's worth doing. Oh, God, and there's going to be 2 seasons next. Next year, I'm not ready.
I don't think that's a good idea, personally.
My mental health, definitely not.
It's also like, it's a bit intense because obviously you have to watch it every day. It's not a once a week kind of thing. Yeah. It's very committed. Home by 8:30. WhatsApp group at the ready. I'm not sure if how that's going to go, to be honest. I don't know if it's going to be successful.
This is so bad, but I was actually quite relieved my relationship ended because he didn't like Love Island and I knew it would affect our relationship. so I could just watch it with no strings attached.
Yeah.
But I guess diving into that, I often feel really conflicted when I say Love Island is one of my favourite shows, because genuinely it is, but it does promote a very narrow beauty standard.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that.
How do you think, you know, one, how do you feel about this? And two, do you think the show could exist with a more diverse cast?
I think the show could definitely exist with a more diverse cast. Do you know what? I think it's so hard because I almost think it's a very easy watch. Everyone loves watching it. Like, oh, wow, amazing, like good looking people all getting together. Like, it's an easy watch. But I also don't think that a lot of people watch that show and think, that's never going to be me. Yeah. Like, why don't I look like that? And I think, to be honest, when TVs kind of think about these initiatives and making a show, sometimes I feel like they get so caught up in, is this going to be entertaining? Like, are people going to watch it? That sometimes, you know, those beauty standards get sidelined a little bit. And whether that's intentional or not, I feel like there's definitely room for them to be a bit more diverse with sizing, with colour. Mm. Yeah. Because even, you know, even on this previous series, you know, you had Yawandi and you had Michael. But they're also, what was Michael? He was like a... He did biomedical science, and it's still like it's a very specific type, isn't it?
Super narrow.
Yeah, it's very narrow.
Well, and I remember, God, people were like, Anna Vakili is the plus size contestant, and I saw a photo and I was like, surely
is she a size 10?
I was like, yeah, very big size 10. I was like, she's tiny and she's gorgeous, as is everyone on there, but it's, you know, I get a lot of messages from young girls being like, how do I watch it and not hate myself? Or like, how do I watch it and not do ab crunches in the break? Yeah. And I'm like, it's difficult.
Yeah, and to be honest, I have a lot of friends who, you know, are quite self-conscious about their body. You know, I think everyone's beautiful, and I also think beauty comes from within. Mm-hmm. But I think when people kind of watch Love Island, it's so hard to watch that and, you know, try and relate to them.
Yeah.
It's like, no one really looks like that. Do you know what I mean? It's a very, like, there's a very small percentage of the UK that probably look like that. And there are some people that are genetically never going to look like that.
Yeah, I mean, hands up over here.
Yeah. And I sometimes feel like it's hard because my boyfriend's really into kind of sports and fitness. And he even said to me, some people will never be a small size. It's just genetically not going to happen. And that doesn't mean that they're not healthy. That doesn't mean anything. Like, size doesn't mean anything. So I think introducing kind of a Love Island that embraces all sizes. And by all sizes, I don't mean, oh, she's curvy, she's a size 10. Let's get a size 18 on there. What's the problem with that?
Totally.
So I definitely love to see that. I think it'd also be like a massive shell shock for the nation to be like, yes. And I think it would be a great chance to champion women.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm always so surprised. I think people think I live in a hovel, and I'm like, no, I probably sleep with more people than you.
Guys, come on. I get some guys.
I'm always like, trust me, you don't want to see my DM. Yeah. I'm like, your boyfriend's in there. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's one of those things. Did going on Love Island affect your relationship with your body?
Do you know what? It definitely did. Like, so I've always been relatively slim, mm-hmm. kind of hanging like from probably a size 6 to a size 12. But when I was preparing to go on Love Island, I was so strict. I was gymming twice a day. Yeah. And it's because I was like, yeah, everyone's going to see me. I want to mm-hmm. look ripped. I want to look amazing. And then I went on the show. And to be honest, I don't think a lot of people feel like this, but I went on the show and I just could not give less of a fuck about what I look like. I was just eating the whole time because I was so hungry. And some people were like, no, I don't want to eat that. You know, I don't want to eat carbs, or I don't want to eat this, and I don't want to eat too much. I was eating consistently all day, like all day. But then when I left Love Island, from someone who I don't really care what I eat, like I never really have, unless it's for something specific, like modeling wise, then no, like I'm never really dieting or anything like that. I always just eat what I want. But I definitely felt a pressure to upkeep that body because people were like, oh, wow, Natasha, right. She's got a great body. Oh, how do I do that? And then I was like, well, now I just eat cake because I'm not on TV anymore.
Yeah.
So it was really hard because on one way you're like, you know, do you act responsible in the public eye and say, yeah, I eat, you know, 5 to 7 fruit and veg a day and I have this and I like to, you know, eat everything in moderation, when really my diet when I came out was really poor.
But then also what's interesting is, you know, you'd gone into the villa with already an unsustainable way of living.
Oh, like,
you
100%.
Know, gymming twice a day, nobody can do
no,
that.
And no one does that.
It was, you know, people were kind of going, oh, she's got this amazing body, but it's a body that's not even your own because it was, you know, coming from a place of gymming twice a day and eating really strictly.
Exactly.
So it's kind of, you know, I can't imagine that pressure.
Yeah, and also upkeeping it, because as much as it's, like, boohoo, like, yeah, you get skinny shamed. I used to get skinny shamed a lot, being like, you know, you're too skinny and all of this stuff. And I really struggled with my body image when I came out because I wasn't sure what size I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I was a bit worried because basically I used to just love taking pictures of my ass.
Me too. Know?
I mean, I just couldn't stop. And then I was getting a bit like, do I want to take pictures of my ass? Are people going to say if it's got smaller? And then people were really kind of honing in on, oh, you've lost weight, oh, you've gained weight, and they really kind of, people notice, and you're like, why do people notice?
He was suddenly under a microscope.
Yeah, exactly. So that was something that I really shied away from, and I don't know if you noticed, but maybe the first 5 months, I was like, arse, abs, tits, yeah, woo. And then after that, I kind of covered up a bit because I was a bit body conscious. I was like, I don't want people to notice when I've fluctuated weight. Like, if I want to eat cake for 5 days, I want to eat cake for 5 days. Yeah. And I don't want to be judged on it.
Totally.
And I also felt a bit irresponsible coming out and saying, I haven't eaten any vegetables today. I had mini rolls.
Yeah.
So it's really hard because you feel a sense of almost like responsibility, because obviously you get quite a lot of young fans. People are kind of like young teenagers, and you never know what's appropriate to say, what's not appropriate to say. It's really difficult.
Well, also because you are just, you know, a human woman, like trying to figure it out and coming out and navigating that. The show recently has gotten a lot of kind of shit for aftercare and mental health on coming out for obvious reasons.
Yes.
I don't know if I, you know, I won't make you talk about it because it's obviously quite...
No, shall I tell you what? Like, I actually quite enjoy talking about this because I think a lot of people came out and kind of slated the aftercare, which I completely understand. Yeah. Like, there should be aftercare, but they do offer aftercare. And this is what, like, is a little bit frustrating, is that, you know, people come out, as soon as they come out, they're like PAs and they get loads of money and everything's amazing. And of course, at that point, they're not looking for aftercare because they're too busy loving mm-hmm. life and, you know, living this kind of VIP lifestyle. And then it's kind of a year and a half on when maybe they've made bad career choices, maybe they've made bad decisions, maybe their career's not gone in a way that they would like to, and then they want someone to blame. And that I do think is unfair, because I don't think ITV can be held responsible to look after you for the rest of your life after you go on a show like that, because but they should definitely manage people's expectations, because I do sometimes feel like they're like, it's going to be amazing, you're going to be a superstar, you're going to be J-Lo next week. When really, of course you can be amazing and you can do really amazing things from coming off of that show, but it's tough. And you also might be really, really, really successful for the first year, and then you might have to go back to your day job. So they need to almost prep you and condition you to think, would you be okay to go on the show and then in 2 years' time go back to your day job? Because if you're not, then don't do it.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of more responsibility that I think they should take on their shoulders, rather than, you know, I'm depressed, like, this is ITV's fault, because at the end of the day, you know what you're getting yourself into. You sign your life away when you sign on the dotted line, and that's part and parcel of becoming instantly famous.
Yeah. What did they offer you after?
So you get, throughout when you're actually on the show, you're talking to a psychotherapist called Marcy, who's great. And, you know, you can speak to her whenever. Like, she's available when you're in the villa and also when you leave the villa. And they also kind of give you contacts to counselling and how to deal with, you know, being in the limelight, because it is a massive adjustment.
Yeah.
Even, like, imagine just walking in the street. You know, I used to live in gym gear and my hair in a bun. Like, I wouldn't wash my hair in weeks and, you know, no one would care. But then suddenly you've got people staring at you and slyly filming you.
And asking for a photo.
Asking for photos, even like slyly recording you. And you've always got to be really aware of who's looking at you. So are they looking at me? Have I got someone on my face? Are they recording me?
Yeah.
It makes you very paranoid. And I think anyone that goes on that show should see a therapist, like, regardless. I think therapy's great. I think any living human being should see a therapist. I think it's the best thing. And I feel like in America, it's seen as such an amazing thing to like, it's to see a therapist. Culture, and I'm going to therapy, yeah. And it's kind of quite cool. Whereas here, it's like, oh, like, you're going to therapy. You're a psychopath. Like, no.
Yeah. I also think it's a generational thing. Like, I think, like, our, like, younger generations, millennial, Gen Z, we're all like, guess what my therapist just said.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, our parents' generations are like, I went to therapy, like, yeah, whispering it, like, it's a dirty word.
Yeah.
It's not, it's like, you know, if you can get access to therapy, it is life-changing. Like,
yeah.
It's so important to have, especially, I mean, like, I can't imagine what it's like to be in your position of to suddenly become so famous, kind of, you know, you go away for 2 months and then you come back and your life is completely different.
But it's weird, like, it's a weird kind of fame, because you're almost, like, famous, like, with regards to, like, millennials and, like, everyone wants a picture with you, but you're not actually famous. Like, I don't know how to describe it, like, you're almost like it is, like, really bad to say, but we're like Z-listers, because you don't actually have a skill. Like, you don't, it's not like, you know, someone who's amazing at singing, or you're not a musician, or you're not a writer, or you're not a journalist. Like, you don't have a specific skill. Like, your skill is just your appearance, really.
Well, also, and your personality. Like, yeah. I think one thing, you know, that did shine across when you were on the show was how lovely you were and your personality and how funny you were.
Oh, thank you.
No, but genuinely, like, and I think that does go for a lot. Like, I think what I imagine is the most jarring thing about coming out is people think they know you.
Yes. People call me Mon. And, like, only my, before I went on that show, it was only really my really close friends that would call me Mon. And then people shout your name down the street and you're like, oh my God, I must know you.
Yeah,
and, like, people come up to you and say, I think I used to work with you in Tesco. So, like, and I'm like, that wasn't me.
You know, just, like,
somewhere else. And honestly, I've had conversations and you just never know what to say. But my point is, it's like, for example, what happened with Mike and, you know, Sophie Graydon, like, I feel like people that go on that show, they have this facade on Instagram. It's like, you know, I've got an amazing car, I've got a new lease car,
yeah,
I've got this clothing deal, I've got this, and it's all very competitive and life is very shiny, and it's aspirational. Mm. But really, like, reality stars have a due diligence to discuss mental health, I think. And to speak out about, you know, how they're actually feeling. There have been some days where I felt mega depressed. There are some days where I'm really anxious. I feel really paranoid. But on my Instagram story, I'm like, hey guys, I've had such an amazing day. I'm doing this and this.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially for the sake of, like, the younger generation, people need to normalize mental health. And everyone suffers with some sort of mental health at one point in their life, whether it's to do with grief, anxiety, depression.
Totally.
So I just think people need to be more okay with sharing how they truly feel.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the whole point of being a reality star is the reality of it. That's what people like. And then it's like, you know, there's a gap where the authenticity is lost.
100%.
And people feel the need to keep up this facade.
But that's exactly it. It is the facade and it is that aspiration, like talking about, like, making it as glossy as it can be. And then you feel like almost, or I can imagine feeling trapped within, like, as you were saying at the beginning, like keeping up appearances within that. And
yeah.
And then how do you, like, what do you find grounding with managing social media, with managing your interactions on that?
I mean, it's really difficult because obviously you have your agent who obviously suggests, like, what's right and wrong to do. Like, for example, I completely forgot that I had a tax bill to pay. Like, so the first year of me being on Love Island, I was like, yeah, I'm so rich. So I spent all this money and then, like, I got slapped with this big fat tax bill and I was like, oh, I don't have that in my account. What's going to happen? And I really had, like, I was, like, really stressing because, and that's another thing that I feel like ITV need to kind of give advice on is how to manage your money, because that's a massive thing. Because I think, especially because I was a student before, living out my overdraft, living my best life on Greggs, you know, McDonald's. And then you suddenly have, you know, lots and lots of money and you think that you're rich. Mm. You actually think that the money that you're getting, like, say, for example, like, you know, clothing deals, you can get 100 grand for a clothing deal. You know, you're getting paid between probably 5 and 10,000 for an Instagram post. Like, all this money, like, in your head, you're like, this is, I am rich. Like, I am a billionaire.
Yeah.
But really, in the grand scheme of things, you're not actually rich. Like, that money, like, you need to save that for, you know, a rainy day. And no one really teaches you that. And I really wanted to come out on Instagram and be like, guys, I've been slapped with a big fat old tax bill and I'm really scared because I think the bailiff's going to come around and start taking my stuff. But like, it's kind of like, where do you find the barrier of like what to share and what not to share? Like, it's very difficult. And, you know, a brand's going to dislike you for kind of oversharing on that kind of stuff. Like, ooh, yeah. Do you know what I mean? And you never know who's looking at your stuff. So it's really, really difficult.
It's so hard to navigate. I mean, like, I couldn't even comprehend the level of, you know, followers and things like that. But even I feel pressure on kind of days when I genuinely feel so awful. I'm like, do I share that? Do I tell people? And that's coming from, again, me, who people are like, she literally shares when she like does a shit.
Yeah. So, like, I love that.
It's, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult because there are also things that, do I keep this to myself?
Yeah.
You know, and also because once you've put it out there, it's out there.
Yeah.
You can't take it back.
Exactly. But you also get a sense of, you have all these followers, but you can also feel very alone. Like, it's a very weird thing. Like, I think what was, like, for example, with Mike, and there was so much speculation, like, oh, he was, like, doing loads of drugs, and he was doing this and that. And, like, simply, it was a pure fact that he had a mental illness, and he didn't speak about it.
Yeah.
That's plain and simple. He was really badly depressed, and he didn't feel comfortable talking to anybody about it.
Yeah.
And that's the sad reality, that people feel like they have to upkeep this amazing, shiny life, when life isn't so shiny. And, you know, he got slapped with a big fat off tax bill, just like I did. And it's that shock, like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then you feel alone with the shame of that, as well as feeling depressed and not being able to talk to anyone.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's a perfect storm.
Yeah.
And especially for men, when there is, you know, there are statistics, men are more likely to kill themselves anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And I feel like men, like, I was speaking to my boyfriend about this, and I think he brought up like kind of a valid point. I feel like men are not, like, they're uneducated on mental health, but because they're less likely to share about their feelings, and they're always like, oh, if a guy went up to another guy and was like, oh yeah, mate, I'm depressed because I broke up with my ex-girlfriend, he'd be like, oh mate, it's fine, let's have a couple of beers. Like, it's like, whereas I think if my friend was like, you know, I'm feeling a bit depressed, I'd be like, oh, so why is that? What's the root of the problem? Like, what can we do? Like, more like pragmatic.
Like, also like therapy as well. Like, you give, like, you know, one thing I loved so much about you being on Love Island was, I feel like every year there is the camp of girls, girls and guys, girls, and you very firmly fell in the camp of girls, girls.
Yeah.
Have you always been that way?
So I've always championed my girls. Like, I'm still so close with all of my school friends, with my uni friends. I am just like loyal to a T. Like, I think if my friends could describe me, I'm just so hot on like loyalty. Like,
I love that.
If I kissed a boy like when I was 7 years old, you cannot touch him. Like, that's it. And like vice versa. Like, if my friend kissed someone when they were 10, like, I will not be going anywhere near them. Like, and I'm so protective of my friends as well. Like, if someone hurts my friend, like, and someone, you know, you've had an argument with my friend, like, I'm also your enemy. That kind of thing. So I've definitely always been a girl's girl. I've always got along with boys as well. And I love having my guy friends, but I just don't think anything can be like being a girl's girl.
Well, also there's that sense of community and openness that you get from female friendship, which you can get from male friendship, but I think it's a lot rarer. And I think like that feeds back into what we were saying. If I think men don't have access to that conversation.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I could talk to my girls about anything. Chap nipples, it's been a topic. Me and my friend were talking about, we were talking about getting pregnant one day, and then I was like, I saw this image of like a really chapped nipple from this woman that was breastfeeding, and then we ended up googling chafed nipples for about an hour and just talking about, oh my god, look at these nipples, they go darker when you're pregnant and all of this stuff. And we just were talking about chafed nipples, BV, thrush, all in one conversation.
It works.
Like, it's amazing because I feel like so championed by my best friends, just that I feel so comfortable to talk about anything. Mm-hmm. Like, anything that normal people would see as embarrassing, I don't feel embarrassed in front of my friends. And to be honest, like, I think my boyfriend's very, very much like that. But I don't think a lot of guys are like my boyfriend in the sense that I would do a poo in front of my boyfriend.
That's
he'd be
so
he
nice.
would be in the, like, he'd be having a bath and I'll be doing a shit.
Like, that's healthy. Like, it should be like that. Like, I think, like, that's fantastic. And also, I remember once I wore a dress that gave me such chafed nipples at a festival, I cried. Like, I genuinely had to.
The dress, it
was like a Bardo dress, and I wasn't wearing a bra, and my boobs were a lot perkier at the time. And the dress just was, like, skimming over my nipples, and they chafed so much. I honestly, like, crouched behind a portaloo and wept. Like, it hurt so much. And then went back and changed. Honey. And I've never worn a dress since. I'm actually naked as we're recording this. but yeah,
I bet you shared that with your girlfriends as well, didn't you?
No, I mean, I was with my best friend and I was holding her hand and she was like, it's okay, we're gonna get you some Vaseline. We're gonna get some Vaseline on those nips of yours. Yeah. You know, that's female friendship.
Even like just getting naked in front of your friends, like I do a poo in front of my friends, I fart in front of my friends. Whereas I know some relationships where girls are like, ugh.
You're like, I would never fart in front of my boyfriend. And you're like, well, that's healthy.
Yeah, well, that's really healthy. Like, yeah, because I know those farts.
God forbid he knows you have bodily functions.
Yeah, literally, normal bodily functions.
This feeds into something quite nicely. Did you have a good relationship with your body growing up?
I never ever thought about my body growing up because I was naturally slim. I was really sporty. Mm. And it was just something that I kind of just overlooked, I think. And so when I was younger, I mean, I was like a boy repellent. Like, I did not get my first kiss until I was probably about 15. And I was really happy in my own skin, to be honest. I used to have like really like these, my mom used to put this really horrible gel in my hair called Soft and Free. And like, I think it was boy repellent because everyone was like, why is that girl's hair wet? When it's actually just
was like slick.
It was like slick and it was actually wet. Like, it was not okay. And, but
she was like, Montana is never going to kiss a boy. She's like, no boys are coming near my daughter.
This is what I'm going to do.
I think that was actually why, in hindsight. And I think it was only really until... So I went to an all-girls school until year 11. And I loved going to an all-girls school. It wasn't bitchy. Everyone was friends with everybody. It was a small kind of year of 50. And everyone used to just, you know, wear their kilts and, you know, not wash their hair in a week and have hairy legs. And no one wore makeup. And it was amazing because no one really cared what they looked like.
Yeah.
And then when I got to sixth form, I was like, oh, there's boys involved. I was like, oh, maybe I need to put some makeup on. And that was where I started to feel the pressure because I wasn't really sure even how to behave in front of boys at that point.
Well, I guess also there's that, I've been talking a lot about this recently, but there's that moment kind of through puberty where suddenly you realize even though you don't necessarily feel like a woman, you look like a woman and men start to sexualize you. And you're like, what? Like, why is this happening? Yeah. And I imagine like being in an all-girls school, getting into sixth form and there are boys there, you're like, what? Why are you looking at me like that?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very different thing. Even though you might necessarily not even be feeling kind of that sexy because you're, you know, a baby.
But I feel like I've always been very, like, I'm not a sheep. Like, if I think something or I want to do something, then I'll do it, like, whether people are behind me or not. So, for example, all the girls used to have, like, really, really short skirts, like, really, really short. And I just really liked wearing a long kilt. Like, I don't know what it was. I just, like, it's really sophisticated. I'm going to wear it down here below the knee. And everyone was like, why is your dress so long? Like, can you roll it up? I was like, no, I like it. But I think that was the first kind of time where I felt slightly pressured to look good. And so obviously I had curly hair. Mm. And then as I grew up, I was like, no, I want straight hair because I grew up in a very white area. So, and everyone had straight hair. Everyone had really long, straight, amazing hair. And my hair was like frizzy, greasy, nothing of the sort. So my hair's still straight now, but I almost wish that I'd embraced my curls, like, especially when I was younger. But it's not something that I did. And I think that was probably because of pressure.
What's your background?
So I've got South American, South Africa, Japanese, Jamaican.
What a mix.
I mean,
really interesting.
Both of my parents are mixed, so that's where that's from. But I really enjoy, I tell you what, I think I was very lucky. I've had really good friends growing up, and we've all just kind of supported each other and no one's really given a shit about what size whoever is. And everyone was just, I've just been really lucky. And I think I'm the sort of person that I will always build my friends up and like, I think all my friends are beautiful, like, and they're all different shapes, sizes and ethnicities. And I just think everyone's beautiful. So, and my friends are very similar. So I think I've just been really lucky.
That's really nice. When you were a teen, like, were you, because you said you were kind of always pretty, like, you know, you didn't ever feel weird about your body, but did you ever go through kind of, you know, was puberty weird for you? Did you ever have like...
I'll tell you what was weird for me.
Yeah.
So I used to have a childminder and she was kind of from Bushy area. And... She lived on a council estate and we always used to go to this park. There was like, and she had a daughter and we were like best friends and we used to just love doing things together. Anyway, so bearing in mind, I'm probably about 13, 14 at this point. And I'm still at an all-girls school, don't really know that many boys, and I'm just in my, you know, girl bubble. Mm. We go to this park, and there are these boys. I'm like, oh, maybe one of them will find me pretty. And one of these boys is like, that girl's got a tash. She's got a tash. And I remember being like, what's a tash? And then my friend was like, I think he means a moustache. Do you have a moustache? And it's basically because I suffered really badly with hyperpigmentation, like from a young age. Like, it's just kind of, it's quite common, like, when you're mixed race. And I remember being like so self-conscious at that point, being like, oh my God, I've got a moustache. I remember going back to my mum being like, I have a moustache and you never told me. And this boy said to me, I had a moustache, I'm never going to get a boyfriend. And it's kind of just discovering things like that where someone picks it out. And I feel like, especially younger boys, they always pick out things about girls because they just don't ever think about what they say because they're morons.
Yeah.
So that was definitely really hard for me because I only really realized and noticed that in like when someone said that to me. So that was something that I really struggled with confidence-wise. But puberty, I don't think I really struggled with puberty.
Because I was just like, you know, you're so angelic, honestly. I'm like, I was like, have you ever had an awkward phase? Like, you know, when people are like, oh, my limbs were so long and I just was tripping over myself. Like, I don't know. I just was wondering if that had happened. But
so I was always very sporty. So in both of the schools that I went to, the sporty people were naturally like the cool group.
Yeah.
But should I tell you what? Like, ever since I was at school, and like my mum's always said this to me, I've always wanted to be friends with everybody, and I hate people feeling left out.
Yeah.
And if people were sat on their own, like at lunch, I would always go sit with them. I don't care what group I was in or who I was with. I was never the type of person to leave anybody out. I hate people like feeling left out. And that's what I really pride myself on, and I have since I was a lot younger, is that no one deserves to feel left out or bullied by anybody. But to be honest, I was a weird little gangly boy lookalike child. I have, people used to call me Daddy Longlegs because I just had these really long limbs and I was really good at sports. I was good at running. But at that point, I wasn't really that bothered like about what other people thought because my friends loved me, and like just because boys didn't fancy me, it wasn't the be all and end all because, you know, I was playing netball with my group of friends. I was playing lacrosse with my group of friends, and, you know, that was all that mattered to me when I was younger.
Such a healthy attitude.
I know. So wholesome.
I'm learning so much.
What would you say to your, like, you've got a huge Instagram following, to the young girls who are like following you, who are watching Love Island, who are kind of feeling insecure in their body and themselves? Like, is there anything, any advice you would give them?
I would just say, stop trying to change like who you are. Stop trying to look older. You know, stop trying so hard to be a certain person or a certain version of yourself, because the person who you are now is going to change because you're so young, and you're going to change in the next 10 years, and just enjoy being young. Like, I see 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds doing like winged eyeliner better than I ever have. And it's just, I just find it a little bit crazy that, you know, even young kids wearing so much makeup, and, you know, obviously it's their choice, but I feel like people should enjoy their childhood for what it is, and, you know, make mistakes, make more mistakes. And I think it's important to make mistakes when you're younger. Yeah. You know, have, you know, your dream at moose face. We've all been there. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've all had some tragic foundation
times. We all thought it looked so good, and it was so bad.
It was so bad. And it was at the point where they didn't really have that many shades. So I used to go into school with almost like very, very dark face with like a not so dark neck and body, because they didn't really have that many shades.
They didn't have one pale enough for me. And the lighter shade was like alabaster. And I still looked orange. And I used to do concealer. I did Dream Matte Mousse on my lips,
yes,
and black eyeshadow all over my eyelids, and I thought I looked like that bitch. Yeah. Like, I was like, I am iconic. What's wrong with us? Like, why?
But I feel like it's always good to look back on those pictures and be like, that was funny. We were cool. It's like that side fringe. Did you, were you in that era?
Of course. The side fringe. I definitely did the side fringe.
And my fringe, right, because I had curly hair, and my hair was so greasy because my mum put that horrible stuff in, I used to straighten it and my hair used to like frazzle. So it was all static. So this bit would be up, but half my hair would be like this, like statically up, because I burned and singed my hair off so much. So I look back on my pictures, and even like, because I'm still friends with all the girls I went to school with, we always look back on pictures and just laugh. And it is those memories. Like, you can't look perfect forever.
It's humbling. I think it's important to be like, we've all had the glow up.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The glow up.
And it's good to be able to laugh at yourself, right? Like, it's good to...
It's healthy.
Like,
and I think people are so, like, not even ashamed, but they're always thinking about, oh, what do people think about this? And, you know, if I join Chamber Choir, are people going to think I'm a loser? I fucking love Chamber Choir.
I love Chamber Choir.
Yeah, I love Chamber Choir. It was honestly, like, it was cool. And I wish it was still cool. Like, and even... Honestly, you should see what I look like. I feel like I'm going to have to try and get a picture up just to show you because it's so good.
Do you want to wait? Show us at the end and then we'll...
Okay, I'll show you at the end.
Because I do want to see, but I'm also like, okay. I don't want to... Because it also will be late. Okay, so I want to take it back to Love Island. So obviously we were talking about how little representation there is for people of colour on the show.
Yeah.
As a woman of colour on the show, did you find it difficult, you know, during and after? Like, you know, did you feel like... One thing I find frustrating is when I watch the show and, you know, they're asked, the guys are asked what's their type and they go, blondes or brunettes. And you're like, so you mean white women? Like, yeah. I find it deeply frustrating. Was that something you experienced? Did you find it hard?
So to be honest, I think I'm definitely from a different background to a lot of other mixed race girls out there and mixed race boys. In the sense that I've definitely had quite a privileged upbringing. So I didn't feel like I was segregated in any way, except the fact, like, little things that people overlook. For example, getting your hair wet is a whole different ballgame when you've got mixed race hair, Afro-Caribbean hair, because you can't get it wet all the time. The chemicals completely ruin it and make it frizzy. But people just kind of overlook that. Oh, why aren't you getting in the pool? Like, don't be boring. Other than that, I think I'm a little bit different because I grew up in a very like white area.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally was the only mixed race person in my whole year group at school.
What was that like?
I never noticed a difference. Honestly, wow. I never really noticed, and it was only like about the hair situation that it kind of got brought up because I kind of was wishing that I had straight hair. And And really, I should have just embraced my roots. I should have embraced my Afro-Caribbean hair. And now, to be honest, I don't know if I'll ever be able to get it back. But I do think it's so important to have a diverse ethnicities on there. Like, have we seen a Chinese person on Love Island?
Well, that's a really good point.
Or an Asian person on Love Island.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And it's just a case of, do you know what? I think they're learning as a TV program as well, because... The end of the day, it's only been on for 4 or 5 years, yeah. Like the new one. And I feel like they're constantly learning themselves and they have to be more diverse, and it will set such an example. I don't think they understand like how many people watch that show. Mm. They'll set such an example and it will have such a positive impact for so many people. Like, I feel like they should definitely have more mixed race. And to be honest, I feel like it's very topical at the minute about this whole diversity thing. And I think it's size, I think it's ethnicity, I think it's different types of people from different types of background. I think every single person from that show is in somewhat privileged in some way.
Yeah.
And I think let's not only have that kind of sector of people, let's bring in people who just are from all different walks of life. So I think that would really, really make such a difference to people's confidence as well, because I think it's very hard to watch a show and not see yourself on the television.
Yeah.
So with such a widely watched show, like, is it? Mm-hmm. It's probably the biggest watched reality TV show, surely.
I feel like it's probably the biggest TV show in the UK.
Yeah, I feel like it is. I feel like with that comes some responsibility.
Yeah, and yeah. I wonder with the skin colour thing as well, because you're like kind of like that golden, you still kind of meet the ideal. So I think, because what I've heard from the commentary of Love Island is that when it's the darker skin, black individuals on the show, it's them that've got the backlash and the pushback and the kind of like unsavory comments from what I have seen.
There's a bit of a white gaze, isn't there? Like, I just think, even with the black girls that were on it this year, and Michael and Ywandi, she's a very specific, she's Irish, she's also very well educated. She's a doctor, isn't she? Or she did medical...
She was a scientist.
She was a scientist. And then you've got Michael, who did biomedical science. And it's a very, like, it's a very specific type of person. And I feel like it would be great to get, you know, someone who works in a confectionery store. Or someone that's just got a really...
I love how specific that is. Like, I'd love to get a florist.
Yeah, a florist. Like, or just a random thing that just... The people are like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Because I think people that go on Love Island, automatically they're cool. So whatever they do is also considered cool.
Yeah.
And do you know what? There are so many bad things that kids especially think are cool. Like, you know, doing drugs or doing this or doing that. Or, and I feel like they can have such a positive impact on young people if they just kind of introduce a wide variety of people and different jobs.
Well, I guess representation is so important, and that's shown, you know, through so many statistics that it makes such a difference to kids growing up. Just seeing someone that looks like them on TV is so important. Did you have anyone that you looked up to when you were growing up?
I've always looked up to my mum and Michelle Obama.
Yeah, good choice.
She, Michelle Obama is just goals.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm genuinely obsessed, and Oprah, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Powerful, incredible woman.
Okay, Montana, I want to hear about, so you're the founder of the swimwear brand Swim Society, is that right? Tell me about it.
It's something that I'd wanted to do for ages, but I just wanted to get the brand ethos right. And I'm so passionate about, you know, championing women of all sizes. And it honestly breaks my heart that some people just don't have that self-confidence because they don't think they're beautiful, because they think they're a big, because they're a bigger size. So I just wanted to create a swimwear brand that caters for everybody and doesn't put them in categories of, you know, plus size or skinny or tall or petite, and just cater for everybody. So that's kind of where the premise came from. Mm-hmm. And it's launched, and I honestly couldn't be happier with the response. But I think what's quite hard is that I do have to deal with a lot of backlash, because people are like, why are you representing like larger sizes when like you're not a larger size? Like, how would you know how that feels? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, you've got no idea.
But that's really interesting though, because I think if you just went for like a small size range, you'd get backlash.
But I tell you what, I've had so many messages, like even like from Honey, and you know, everyone in the office purrs on Honey 24/7.
Honestly, but genuinely, it's my favourite bikini brand. Like, I'm not even joking.
What's the size range that you do?
We go from a size 6 to a size 20. Okay. And we're actually looking to increase that as well. Because I just feel like everyone has the right to feel confident and sexy in their own skin, in their own body, no matter what size you are. And, you know, brands should cater for people of a bigger size, whether it's especially in bikinis, because a lot of people dread going on holiday because they're like, oh my gosh, where am I going to find a bikini? Yeah. Where am I going to find a bikini that suits me? Where am I going to find a bikini that holds me in? Yeah. You know, because my friend's got massive boobs and she's like, how on earth am I going to find a bikini? Like, a bit of string is not going to help. It's not going to hold those up. So, you know, I feel really honoured to be part of a team. And, you know, the team at Swim Society are so passionate, especially about what we do and our ethos. And I'm hoping that we can just go international, baby, you know, and spread the message.
I really hope so. Honestly, I feel like Swim Society just has the most incredible ethos. And like, your advertising, it just makes me so happy. Like, such carefree, beautiful, diverse women having the best time.
Yeah.
I just love it. I'm like, when am I going to be in my advert? Like, this is what I'm waiting for, truly.
You're going to get the call up, honey.
The collab.
Yeah.
Montana, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Before you go, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me on Instagram at Montana Rose Brown 1. You can find Swim Society on skinnydip.com, and you can also find it in Topshop. You can also find it on ASOS.
Oh, hi.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Hi. So it's very exciting. And in Gatwick and Luton, if you're going on holiday.
Oh my God. Yeah. Incredible. Thank you so much for coming, and we love you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Body Protest podcast, brought to you by the Pink Protest.
We would love it if you left us a review and some stars, preferably 5, on Apple Podcasts.
Preferably.
It will help other people find our podcast and join our Body Protest family.
Honey, where can we find you on social?
Well, I'm on Instagram at HoneyKinney, and you should also follow the Pink Protest at Pink Protest. Nadia, where can we find you?
I'm at nadia.craddock on Instagram, and you can also listen to my little work podcast, Appearance Matters the Podcast, where Jay Pono and I talk about the body image research with some of the experts in the field.
This podcast was brought to you by the Pink Protest and produced by the wonderful Scarlett Curtis.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.